Hi there, it's Melvin. Just wanted to take a moment to thank the team over at Thrizer for supporting this month's podcast sessions. Thrizer is a payment platform that you have to check out if you are a private pay therapist and accepting out-of-network benefits. It basically helps clients save on therapy upfront. Thrizer can help verify a client's out-of-network benefit ahead of the first session so that they get transparency up front on what their out-of-pocket costs will be. I'll tell you more about Thrizer here in the middle of our session, but if you go to sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, you actually and then enter the code STC upon sign up, you get your first $2,500 in fees waived. Again, that's over at sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, and be sure to enter the promo code STC. So we'll jump right into today's podcast session. Hey there, welcome to session 71 of Selling the Couch. Hope you're having a great week. I've been playing a lot of basketball recently. In fact, this past Saturday, my so-called friends... Just kidding. If I'd convinced me to get up and get to the gym at 5:30 in the morning on a Saturday morning to play basketball for 2 hours, which was a lot of fun once I got there. As you probably know, I'm an early riser, but that was even a little bit early for me. Today's podcast conversation is a conversation that I'm really excited about because I feel like this topic is one that we need to keep having conversations about. And that is this idea of setting fees for our practice and charging what we are worth. If you remember from session 51, where I had Jane Carter on the podcast talking all about money shame, that episode resonated with so many people and really helped a lot of our colleagues. So if you haven't had a chance, I encourage you to check out session 51 as well, which you can check out at sellingthecouch.com/session and the number 51. This conversation was actually triggered by a blog article that someone in the Selling the Couch Facebook community wrote. Her name is Tiffany McLean, and Tiffany is a marriage and family therapist out in San Francisco, and she's built a very successful private pay practice. But Tiffany has also realized that her passion is helping our field tackle the money shame and the money struggles that so many of us face. And she wrote this article called The Top 10 Myths Therapists Believe About Setting Fees. I actually thought about doing this episode in just one part, 30 minutes. Let's tackle that blog post and go at it. But, I feel like this is such an important topic. So many of us struggle with this. I struggle with this on so many levels. And I just felt like if we can break this up into two parts and really have a conversation, two 30-minute chunks, and have it for a full hour, we can really start to demystify some of the ideas and the myths that we have around setting fees and hopefully get each one of us to start moving forward. But before we get to today's episode, I wanted to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, which is Brighter Vision. Brighter Vision is a company that helps our field make beautiful websites. If the thought of creating a website on your own and managing it, that just feels like, I don't want to do that, then I encourage you to check out Brighter Vision at sellingthecouch.com/brightervision. And that gives you the first month absolutely free. And then after that, it's a very reasonable monthly cost for updates and any sort of servicing to your website. So we're going to cover a number of myths today. Well, actually 5 myths, and I wanted to go over them with you. Again, as I mentioned, this is based off an article, which I'll link to here in the show notes, which you can find at sellingthecouch.com/session and the number 71. But the first 5 myths that Tiffany and I are going to be talking about is that the first one is it's important to assess the market before setting my fee. The second myth that we'll be talking about is I have to wait until I am experienced enough to charge my full fee. And the third myth is I have to be on insurance panels when first starting out Myth four, it is my ethical obligation to offer a sliding scale as a way of giving back. And myth five, which we'll be talking about, is I can't charge more than my consultant or supervisor or therapist or whoever that person might be for you. I'm really excited about this conversation. As I said, I just think it's something that we need to have. It's definitely a conversation I encourage you to listen to take notes on, especially if the thought of looking at your finances absolutely scares you. If you feel like you're struggling to set your own fees for your private practice, if there's a part of you that wants to do private pay but is just scared, these are all reasons to check out today's episode. So let's get right to it. Here is my conversation with Tiffany McLean from HeyTiffany.com. Hi, Tiffany. Welcome to Selling the Couch.
Hi, Melvin. Welcome. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, I am excited about our conversation. I feel like the last time we talked about like money, it was just resonated with a lot of clinicians, because I really do think a lot of us really do struggle with setting fees, fear of money, fear of like charging what we're worth and all of those things. So I'm excited for today's conversation.
Me too. I actually went back and listened to, I think it was Jane's interview on money shame, and it was so good. A lot of the things that she was talking about are things that I found too when I was talking to therapists. So all of this stuff is all around us all the time.
Yeah. And so I absolutely think that's true. When you wrote this blog post recently, and it's called The Top 10 Myths Therapists Believe About Setting Fees. And I wanted more than anything to dive really deep into that blog post, because there's just so much great information there, and I know that's going to help a lot of people. But I wanted to start by asking, you know, what motivated you to write that blog post?
Oh yeah, two things I would say. The first has to do with my own money anxiety that I had when I started seeing clients for real. So in my graduate program, we started seeing people within the first 2 weeks. We dived right in with,
They threw you guys right in.
They did. It was super nerve-wracking, but also fantastic experience to just start right out. Mm. And I knew when I started grad school that I eventually wanted to have my own private practice, which meant I knew I had to understand the business side of things. But I was completely terrified whenever money came up. We had to set fees, even though they were really low at the clinic. We had to set fees. And I found myself just being anxious, avoidant, didn't know how to talk about money. And so after my grad program, I went into a 2-year post-master's program. And part of what was written into the privacy policies there was that we had to talk with our clients every 6 months about their fee. And I decided that I would make it a point during that 2 years of post-master's training to really lean into, I guess that's the lean in idea, before I knew about that idea, to really lean in and actually go towards my fear and really find ways to talk to people about it on a regular basis. And through doing that, I actually encountered a lot of these beliefs that I held that I ended up writing about, and finding ways to move through them so that I could talk much more comfortably with my clients about money issues.
Yeah, you know, I was just thinking, like, and that blog post, like, it really, you can totally tell that it's something that's very personal for you.
Yes. Yes. All of the things are beliefs that I held. And then when I talked to therapists, so as I was trying to figure out fees and how to talk about money, I would talk to my friends and colleagues, and they were as avoidant as I was when I began. And all of these things too, over and over, I'd hear people saying these things, the myths that I talk about, and just being terrified and not knowing how or wanting to actually go in and understand what that was about.
Yeah. I was just like curious, like, do you think, just like knowing everything that you know, like, is it just kind of like our personalities, or are just like people in general, are they wired toward like, you know, people in service-based businesses, are they wired to like be scared to charge a certain amount, or what, like, what did you find?
I think that people have a belief that you can either help people or make money. That's what I think it's about. There's as much as our role is to help our clients kind of integrate and understand gray thinking to move beyond black and white thinking. I think around money, a lot of us still have black and white thinking.
That's so really interesting. So it's like a, it's a and, or it's a or situation. It's not a and. Huh.
That's right. There's a fear that if you do charge or do end up making money, then you're going to somehow become bad or start taking advantage of other people and no longer be a helping person.
That's so fascinating. Like, and I don't remember where I heard this, but one time I heard that money is amoral.
Yeah, yeah. As opposed, yeah. That's exactly right. It's not a. There's no value on money itself. It's just a thing that we use and exchange.
Yeah, but I think when we make meaning out of it, like when we take it to that, and I think it's because genuinely, like, we're kind-hearted people. You
right.
know? I think it's hard to like distinguish that, but I think it is when we make that deep, take that deeper meaning into money, is where I think a lot of us get stuck.
Yeah, I heard I was at a talk a few weeks ago, and it was death, sex, and money was the topic, and it was therapists talking. Mm. And the money therapist said something about beware the kind therapist who doesn't like to talk about money. And I thought that was really interesting in terms of this idea that we're just kind-hearted people who don't like to think about money. That brings up a lot. That's a very troublesome when it comes to actually being in a business where we have to exchange money and we're working with our clients to understand their relationship to money.
Yeah. And absolutely. I think that's the piece like I've picked up as well. Like there's something very healing when we work on our own money concerns, how it really impacts the therapeutic relationship and the modeling that it provides.
That's absolutely right.
So yeah. I wanted to jump right into this blog post because it's amazing. I love your writing style, by the way.
Thank you.
You know, we had talked about doing this as kind of a two-part podcast episode. So this first part, we're just going to dive into the first five myths, and then the second episode, we'll dive into the last five. So the first myth that you found about when it comes to just money was this idea that it's important to assess the market before setting my fee. Wondering if you could just talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So I interviewed, you know, I did a survey that had over 200 therapist responses, and then some of those therapists left their contact information for me to follow up with them in interviews. And then also just in general, I've been interviewing therapists for about 6 months and then talking to them longer than that. Mm. And some of the therapists say, you know, when I ask them, how did you end up setting your fee? They say, oh, well, I assessed the market. And I ask them, what do you mean you assessed the market?
Right. That sounds very technical.
It does. It sounds like, oh, wow, I want to understand more about that. Right. And it turns out that kind of just meant, I looked on a couple of, you know, Psychology Today profiles, or, you know, I asked my colleagues what they were charging. And, you know, I actually went and looked up what it means to assess the market. And that is some in-depth, data-driven stuff that I don't know how to do. And none of these therapists were actually doing that. And it turns out that therapists, we kind of already have a general sense of what we feel like we can charge. And then we kind of look around for information to validate what we already believe. Mm. Because in truth, therapists charge anything. You can go on Psychology Today and see anything from, you know, $50 up to $250. Mm. So there's not really a way to get a sense of what the market can really bear or even what that means. I think it's language we just throw out to make it sound like we've done work to figure out what our fee is without actually sitting down and doing the hard work to figure out what our fee needs to be.
That's so interesting. So what is, I guess, what's kind of the other end of that? What is the solution to that kind of myth?
Yeah, all throughout my article, I basically come down to one really important solution, which is sitting down and figuring out what your current expenses are that you need to live to survive day to day, and then also what your expenses need to be in order to not just live, but to thrive and do really well. So that's the self-care things, like being able to, whatever that means for you, afford organic food or be able to get massages or take time off or be able to, you know, let your kid go to camp in the summer. You have to find out what you need to do to actually feel good about your day-to-day life, and then you charge the fee that actually affords you that lifestyle that helps you get those things. So it's actually really concrete what you need to do to figure out what your fee needs to be.
That's really interesting, because and I will be completely honest, like when I was thinking about like setting fees, right? Like my initial thought was go to some directories, figure out what, you know, folks are charging here in Philly, and then, you know, go from there.
Yeah.
But it's a different way of approaching it, because it talks Like, it's more about lifestyle and the reasons why we got into private practice in the first place.
That's right. Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's very interesting. The second myth that you talked a lot about was this idea that I have to wait until I am experienced enough to charge my full fee.
Right. Right. I think a lot of us are, like we talked about in the beginning, very anxious. We go into this work to help people and we don't actually have a very good sense of our value. So when we have this idea in our mind that we have to be experienced enough, a lot of us don't feel like we're enough anyway. As people in the world, as professionals, we're continuing to do our own work around this, which allows us to be very good clinicians because we can empathize with where our clients are at. It doesn't necessarily help us be very good business people.
Well, so, that's a good way of distinguishing it, because I think sometimes there's such an overlap between being a clinician and being a business owner. It's almost like it's one and the same, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, and so like the money decisions get motivated by that, like that, that compassionate side in a way.
Right. Back to that idea of what you actually need to charge to stay in business and to be present for your clients.
Right. So whenever you were saying that word experience, like I just kept thinking that word because that's such, it's almost like a myth, right?
Like, right.
It is a myth, right? Like you're never experienced enough, right?
That's right. And actually when I did two surveys. I did surveys with therapists and I did surveys with people who had sought therapy, some of whom were therapists, but also I had people take that survey who are not therapists. And so I asked what the three most important things people consider when choosing a therapist. And the level of experience was rated lower than trust in terms of why they seek someone out. So in our minds, I think because we're in a field with supervisors and consultants and people who have our own analysts who've been in the field for 20 years, we imagine, well, we can't charge anywhere near what they charge because they've had more experience. When in fact, the people who are coming to us for help are looking for someone they can trust. It doesn't matter if we have trainings under our belt, this and that and this and that. Like, it's going to feel for us like we've never had enough training. But for the people who are coming to see us, they want to be able to come and sit across from someone who can actually understand them.
I felt like a rock had been like lifted off my shoulder when you said that. Because I do think there's a lot of truth in that. Like, when you look at it from a consumer perspective, I think qualifications, level, experience, and those things matter. But, you know, ultimately, like, do I feel comfortable with this person?
That's right. That's right. And I think, you know, for example, most of us, by the time we go to grad school, we have had a lot of life experience. Mm-hmm. And then we use our training to hone that and to really understand what we're doing in the room and our own feelings. I think we can't discount even, for example, being a woman of color who is biracial. I'm going to have something to offer a client of mine who someone else from a different demographic who's maybe been in the field 20 years may not be able to offer a client something that I can offer them. So I think we need to really understand our value even as unique people in the world who have lived over and above our training.
That's really interesting. So it's like that idea of taking experience, not to just mean training, but to really, how do we stand out? What are the unique qualities and what are the unique perspectives that we bring into the world?
That's absolutely right. I'm psychoanalytically trained. So for me, training is absolutely important, but it is just a rounding out of and a honing, a refining of the person we already are when we come into our training.
That's interesting. The third myth that you talked a lot about was I have to be on insurance panels when I first start out.
Yeah, I kind of go into that one.
Passionate about that one.
That's right. I hear so many people saying, you know, here and I live in San Francisco, insurance may reimburse you between $50 and $70 per hour, per client hour. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, sat down and I did the math and it's after you pay for your office and all your business expenses and then take out insurance, that could come down to maybe being $30 you're actually taking in at the end of all your expenses, $30 per hour. And I'm thinking we do so much work and we, you know, so much training and so much learning to get to this point to be making $30 an hour seems crazy to me. Mm-hmm. You know, insurance, we need to work on insurance and that's a whole thing that we need to advocate for on a larger scale. But in the meantime, I think it's okay to be on insurance panels, especially if you're feeling very anxious or if you have other things on your plate and you feel like you're not quite ready to tackle fees. But I think it's important for us to remember that it is a choice to be on insurance panels as opposed to a have to being on insurance panels.
So how do you get past that barrier? I don't know if like, I don't even know any other way to say that. Cause I like at that, like that mental barrier of saying like, I got to get in private practice, but maybe this is it. Like I need to do the insurance panel thing. Like what's the solution to it, I guess?
I think, so one of the things, I didn't talk about this in the article, but I do think it's very important. You have to have a basic sense of that you can survive before you can feel a sense that you can thrive. So if you're really struggling to pay your bills, or you don't know if you're going to be able to have food on your table, then I do believe you have to have a basic sense of safety, which maybe means you start out on insurance panels until you have enough psychic and emotional energy to take the next step and then push beyond. But if you're coming in with a sense of you have a lot of energy to do marketing, you do have a good support network, or you're willing to build a good, you know, support and professional network, maybe good social relationships. If you have already a firm base, then you can get out there and you have to work hard to build your practice, but it's absolutely possible. So again, I don't villainize the choice to be on insurance panels if it's something one needs to do in order to feel safe. But if you already have a basic foundation, then I think it's easy to go beyond, or, you know, you could talk to other people who have been able to build their private practice without being on insurance panels and learn from them.
Yeah, I think there's some wisdom in what you just said, which is, I think a lot of times we go into private practice and we think, okay, I'm just going to do the insurance route. But there's a lot of wisdom in trying to find others, right? Like who actually done it and learning how they did it instead of just believing I have to be on insurance panels and that's just the way it is. And, you know,
that's right. And actually, throughout this article, I'm in a lot of Facebook groups with therapists, and I actually asked them if people would volunteer to be listed in this article, people who were able to build cash pay private practices that allowed them to survive and then thrive within 2 years. And so throughout the article, I put names of therapists who have done that and links to their site. So you can actually see people of all ages, all levels of experience who are able to make it happen. I think it's really important.
Yeah, awesome. And I'll definitely link to the article itself. The fourth myth that you talked a lot about was that this one I feel like is one I probably really struggle with, but that it's my ethical obligation to offer a sliding scale as a way of giving back.
That's right. This is actually probably one of the ones I am the most passionate about, and that's probably because it's one I struggle with myself personally. I actually had a consultant, my group consultant, who brought this idea to my mind that you don't have to have a sliding scale as a way to give back. I was programmed to think, okay, the only way I can give back to my community, the people I want to serve, is to have a sliding scale, and I have to. And to have him say, oh, no, you don't have to, you can, but it's a choice. There are other ways you can give back, kind of blew my mind. I had never thought about that before. This is one I do have. So personally, I have sliding scales. I work with people who I actually, going way back to, you know, my very first clients at my grad program, I still have people from then, and then people I had at my post-master's internship. So I do believe in this. However, it was more of a default for me than a choice. Having a sliding scale in my mind is actually a luxury once you're set. I think most of us start with a sliding scale, not necessarily because we're thinking, oh, I want to give back, but actually it's because we're afraid that we have to take sliding scale in order to stay in business. So if someone calls us and our fee is $150, the person can only pay $50 or $80. We say, okay, we'll take you, because we're afraid to actually set a fee and stick to it.
That's so interesting, because I was just thinking, so what do you, I feel like a lot of people struggle with this. So like, what do you do in that moment where that fear just like hits you, right? Like, You start a private practice, you're waiting for that first client or first couple of clients, you get a call and they're like, and you tell them, maybe you even have the courage to say what you're actually going to charge. And they're like, I don't know if I can afford it. Like, so what do you, I guess, do you have any tips on what to do in that moment?
Yeah, I actually, so now I only take my full fee. So since I got a license, I said, okay, only taking my full fee. So I've been in this situation a lot of times. And my full fee is on the higher side too. So at first it was like, okay, am I going to be able to say this? And the first thing, actually, I would go back to that getting real about what you need to survive and also thrive in your private practice. Mm. So for me to actually have a number that I can see on paper, all right, if I want to be able to afford these things, this is what I have to be bringing in my private practice, allowed me to feel very solid in saying no when people cannot pay my full fee. Mm. And part of what allows me to do that, so it's twofold. One, I know that people are going to call, not this person, but tomorrow or the next week, who can pay my full fee. And when I sit down and did the numbers, I don't have, you know, my calculator in front of me now, but the difference between someone who can pay, let's say if your full fee is $150 versus $80 over a 5-year period, that's thousands and thousands of dollars of difference. Mm. And so for me, I work with people for years. I work in a long-term psychotherapy, so I can actually see, wow, if I take this person, that is going to be over 5 years, a $10,000 pay cut that I would be taking to work with this person. So actually being real about the numbers makes it much easier to say no. That's the first part. And the second part is, I still have colleagues who I really trust, who do fantastic work, who do take sliding scale. So I know that I can also say no to this person and send them to somebody who does absolutely good work and who is affordable for them in the long term with no conflict, or that there's not going to be any resentment, that they can actually go in there and get quality therapy. So they're not going to be left out in the cold.
Yeah, right. It's still at the end of the day, taking care of the people that, you know,
absolutely
taking care of the clients. I love that section because you talk about some kind of just out of the box ways of actually giving back, because that's the underlying principle behind sliding scale also, right? Is that you're trying to help as many people as possible. What are some of those like out of the box ways that maybe you can, you know, give back, maybe without doing the traditional sliding scale?
One of them that I really like, I haven't done this yet, but I always have fantasies of doing this, is just volunteering to be a big brother or a big sister.
Oh, cool. I was a big brother for like 2 years, actually.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, I loved it.
That's right. So that is where you're being in contact with someone who cannot maybe ever afford psychotherapy, or at least, you know, not for the next 10 or 15 years. That's the idea of giving back to someone who could maybe never have access to something like your psychological mind or what you have as a psychotherapist, what you're bringing to the table. So that's a really cool way.
I was thinking like just at a practical level, right? Like if you're charging the traditional full fee,
right,
you have to work less, which means that you can really focus on other things, right? Like you have more hours to focus on other things that really matter, like that.
That's absolutely right. I think about people, you know, I talked to one therapist who got off, I think she was working an agency job. She left the agency job and started her own practice, and she was loving it. She was so proud that she could make a go of it, which was really cool. And I asked her, how many clients do you have? And she said, 26. It's going fantastic. And at some point I said, wow, 26 clients sounds like a lot of clients. And she was, you know, barely making ends meet. And she stopped and she said, oh yeah, it's super exhausting and overwhelming. And so this idea of, you know, running to meet the needs of all your clients, you're exhausted at the end of the day, you can't actually do things like be a big brother, a big sister, or some of the other ideas are teaching workshops for graduate students about things like fee, for example, or running a business. Those are things that we don't get in grad school, most of us. Mm. But also, you know, somebody told me something really interesting about choosing ways to give back that are very different from what you're doing in private practice, like, you know, volunteering at the local animal shelter. I thought that was a really interesting idea to stimulate different parts of your mind as a way of giving back than continuing to do, for example, psychotherapy, kind of just separate them all together.
Yeah, that's, I love those ideas. It's like such a small thing, but it's such a cool, like out of the box way of giving back.
Yeah. And it's one that doesn't compromise your financial needs. So it's not like picking me or you. A lot of therapists, you know, they may take people at a lower fee and then they start getting resentful. Like, okay, I'm making all these sacrifices. You know, what are you doing? It's a terrible position to be in with your clients, right, to kind of start getting that mindset.
Right. The last myth that you talked about, which is myth number 5, which is I can't charge more than my consultant, supervisor, therapist, whatever it is.
Yeah, this is one that a lot of us have. In fact, I even had it. I had a supervisor at one point, and his full fee was $150. And I found myself, when I was being supervised by him, raising my fee up to $140 and then feeling very uncomfortable about saying it. And also, you know, I actually wanted it to be $150, but I felt like, who am I to charge more than this person or the same as this person. Mm-hmm. And then to tell them, I felt so much shame or anxiety about what they might think of me if I did that. So it really forced me to think about this idea. We all have this idea. Oh, we can't charge more than our supervisor. And in my article, I really challenge the reader to ask themselves why. Why can't we? Who says? What are the rules around that? So really asking us to reflect on our own belief systems and really deconstruct them.
The general takeaway, like I just get from these first five, is one, I think a lot of self-analysis and figuring out the why of what we believe. The other thing is just the very practical, the importance of actually taking, as hard as this might be for many of us, like taking out and actually creating a budget and seeing the actual numbers.
That's right. As part of this article, I offer a worksheet that I've used to actually go through and figure out what our current income is and our projected income, and then a video to help people walk through it to really make it as simple as possible. And I am kind of goofy, so I also make the videos a little bit fun to help people get over the anxiety parts of this.
Yeah, definitely. I see it in the article, so I'll definitely link here to it. I can't actually wait to check it out either.
Yeah.
Tiffany, that is the first five. So we will hit those next five in the next session for sure. But just thinking about the first five, what would you say just are like kind of the big like two takeaways?
I think the big two, which I've said throughout, and I'll say it over and over again. The first one is knowing what you need to make in order to meet your goals. That's number one, no matter what. And the second one is actually comes out of this last one, is this idea of comparing ourselves to others or looking around and seeing what others are doing in order to determine what we're doing. I think it's important to talk with other people and to get a sense of what people make work. But at the end of the day, we have to think about what our needs are and not compare ourselves to those around us in order when we're setting our fees and think about what we need for our businesses and our families and our life.
Awesome. Such great advice. Tiffany, what are some of the best ways that folks can get in touch with you?
Oh, yeah. People can check out my website, heytiffany.com, or they can send me an email at tiffany@heytiffany.com.
Awesome. Easy to remember website. Thank you again for doing this.
Thank you, Melvin.
Hi there. Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Tiffany. I know that was a lot of information, and I know that topics like this can bring up a lot of shame and emotions and all sorts of things. Please know that we are here to support you. We are all on this journey together. You can connect with me and with other colleagues, and we can talk about these things in the Selling the Couch Facebook community at sellingthecouch.com/community. And we're more than happy to support you in this process. As I was thinking about these first five topics that I was covering with Tiffany, there was one that really resonated for me, which is that the myth number two, that I have to wait until I am experienced enough to charge my full fee. If I could tell you the depth by which I feel this, I don't even think words can do it justice. This excuse or this myth has been so present in my mind, and I have this amazing ability to convince myself that if I do X, I just need to do X and then I can charge that. But the issue is the X keeps changing. So, for example, I just need to be in private practice for 3 years, or I just need to be in private practice for 5 years, or I need to get this training, or I need to, I don't even know what it is. I mean, it's usually one of those first two, but I think just talking about that second myth really helped me. Tiffany shared a survey result she did of over 100 people who have been in therapy, and that was just so powerful for me. Again, I encourage you to check out the article because I think this will make a lot more sense for you. You can find that at sellingthecouch.com/Tiffany, and Tiffany is with two Fs. But in that survey, it was called The Three Most Important Things People Consider When Choosing a Therapist. And trust played 83.2% of that role. Level of experience was 12.1%, and cost was 4.7%, which is crazy. Because if I'm honest, I totally thought cost would be 83.2% of it. And I think just helped me to worry less and me to better align who I want to be as a professional, but also being able to charge what I'm worth based on my experience. And I hope it does the same for you. You can find show notes to today's episode and a summary of all the things that we talked about at sellingthecouch.com/session and the number 71. As we wrap up, I wanted to take a moment to thank today's podcast sponsor, which is Brighter Vision. Brighter Vision is a company that helps therapists build absolutely beautiful websites. You know, I was thinking, if you have listened to other episodes of the podcast, especially when I have therapists on, and I had them on the hot couch round at the very end, the last question I always ask them is, if you have $500 and a laptop, what is the first step you would take to building your practice? Inevitably, one of the most common responses is, I would create a website. But websites can be intimidating for sure, especially if you're not familiar with the technology, and the thought of just maintaining a website month after month with everything else going on in private practice. If you would just prefer to have someone else do that for you, Brighter Vision is a company that has a very solid reputation in our community, and I encourage you to check them out at sellingthecouch.com/brightervision. That will give you the first month absolutely free. Have a great rest of your week. Thank you so much for continuing to listen to the podcast, for sharing it with our colleagues. If you could do me a huge favor, which is leave an honest review and rating for the podcast, that would help me so much and help the podcast to continue to reach our field and others who may not have listened to it. You can do that at sellingthecouch.com/iTunes. And there's a tab there to leave a rating and review. It just needs to be a sentence or two about how Selling the Couch has helped you as a professional. Thank you again, and take good care. And I'll see you for part two of this conversation, which we are tackling five more myths, including the idea that I should set my fee based on what I deserve, that I should set my fees based on what I feel I can ask for. And if my fees are too low, I'm bad. I should be punished hourly, which is hilarious. Have a great week. Take care. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Selling the Couch podcast. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit www.sellingthecouch.com.
So if you've been listening to the STC podcast for a while, or you've been listening to podcasts and you've had this thought of, Mel, I would love to launch my own podcast in order to grow my business, just wanted to encourage you to check out our free podcasting workshop, which is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop. You can basically sign up at a day and a time that works for you. It's 90 minutes. And when I do these workshops or when I record them, I truly believe in quality teaching, so it's going to be well worth your time. We're going to go through gear recommendations and how to launch strategically and how to think about monetizing your podcast and how to line up your podcast with your existing offers and how to do it strategically and authentically and not salesy and slimy and all of those things. So again, the link is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop.